Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Maroon Friday edition of the Yard. A little bit later than I wanted to be, but I wanted to go to baseball. And glad I did. Once we got out of the first inning, it was a really good day pitching-wise. And it's been a good week pitching. Reminder, tomorrow, scrimmage at 12:15, and then following the scrimmage will be fan day. And doors are going to open around 3 o'clock. It's going to run from 3:30 to 5:30. Chance for you to come get autographs and meet the team, maybe grab a picture or two. So it should be a long but fun day on the Mississippi State campus tomorrow. Hope that you can turn out and be a part of that. Getting a lot of people hitting me up about the Cowboy, Ronnie Braswell. Kind of want to know what's going on. Ronnie is still in very serious condition, but things are improving. Hopefully we'll get an update tomorrow, and as I get it, I'll share it on Twitter. I can tell you the family has been overwhelmed by your support, and that's one of the things I want to talk about in the early part of this show is, you know, Ronnie's a guy that's been coming forever and a day, but only in the last few years has he had tickets close to home plate. Many of you kind of know him as the Cowboy, but he is Ronnie, and he's become a fixture at Duty Noble Field. He's part of our Mississippi State family. You know him mainly from baseball, but you know, the Cowboy is at Davis Wade and at Hump and everywhere else. He's true Maroon all the way. But he's a great guy, and I can tell you I've had a lot of interactions with him over the years. And I know last year, and I told Chris Simonis this, you know, last year, you know, he missed several games, and people began to miss him. And people were asking on Twitter, hey, Steve, what's going on with the Cowboy? It always sits behind home plate. So, you know, reach out and find out. At the time, he was having some health concerns then, too. And then next thing I know, I'm getting on the elevator one day to go upstairs and cover a ball game. And Ronnie's getting on the elevator with me to go down to go get behind home plate and give the umpires absolutely unshirted hell. But I saw that on Twitter. I said, Cowboy's back. And next thing I know, I look out and there are people that are like going by to see Ronnie and let him know that they're thinking of him and getting their picture made with him. And those things are all important, you know. And I say that to say this. We really are a family. And listen, I know the portal has changed kind of how we look at the active roster from time to time. You know, sometimes guys go in the portal because they're encouraged to. It's like, hey, you're not going to play here. If you want to be a player and get playing time somewhere else, you know, hey, we support that. We'll do our best to help you find another team. And I can tell you that the coaches at Mississippi State do a great job of helping in that regard, giving good references for guys. And they're not going to lie about it. But, you know, there are some guys out there that are great kids and just good players. And good sometimes isn't enough. You know, and there are some guys here that have been signed that just, it hadn't worked out in baseball, basketball, or in football. And so you think so much of the kid, but you have to think about your program and your roster. So guys leave, and sometimes everybody thinks, oh, well, they're just quitting. They're all chasing money. That's just not the case for most of these guys. There's a few of them that do that. But when it comes to all of us, you know, our fans, we really are a family. And I know that's, we pushed that a long time for football. Hey, you know, the health state family and that kind of stuff. But the reality of it is you and I are part of a family. And at times we're not always going to agree. Families fight sometimes. But we all love Mississippi State. And when one of us that is connected to all of us is missing, people pay attention. And I use that again to kind of equate to how important it is for us to let people know that we care about them. What happens when you are dealing with something of a serious nature, oftentimes you feel like you are doing it alone and you feel like nobody cares. And I can tell you that I've had so many people that have reached out and I have shared so many of those messages. Guys, we've had, I don't know, maybe a dozen former Mississippi State players that have reached out and said, hey, what's going on with the Cowboy? You know, I mean, that guy's always supported us. What's going on? And I think you need to know that. I don't think it's a situation where, you know, we share everything. You know, we want to be respectful to the family. We're respectful to Ronnie. But there's so many people that have reached out and said, hey, I'm praying for Ronnie. And hey, Steve, is there an update today on the Cowboy? And so we try to share that as often as we can while being respectful to the family in Ronnie's very sensitive situation right now. Again, we've had a couple of wins, but we are nowhere near out of the woods. And so I wanted to share that with you because I want you to understand too, not just the Cowboy himself, but you matter. And as I shared earlier this week, don't ever underestimate the absence you would create in our family by not being here, one reason or another. I mean, just the Cowboy. So many of you, you don't even know his name. You've never been around him, but you equate him with our Mississippi State family. And you're like, hey, something's not right. What's going on with the Cowboy, right? There are other people that look at you in the same light. That's important to understand. You are important. You have value. And all of a sudden, if you come up missing, people are going to notice. And so on behalf of the Braswell family, I can tell you thank you for your prayers and your support. Please keep them coming. Again, the family has been overwhelmed by your support. It gets me plumb misty-eyed to see how you guys have inquired about a guy that is so very special to so many people. And many of you only know him from seeing him on TV, you know. You see him back there behind home plate, kind of giving the umpires a little gruff, and more times than not, you're feeling the same way he is. You don't think the Bulldogs are getting a fair shake. And so there's Ronnie out there being your representative too, right? And so I share that with as much love and compassion as I possibly can. I will keep updating as I get information. I am hopeful and optimistic that the Cowboys are going to be okay. But, you know, we're not there yet. He is still very much under ICU, you know, care. And so that's important to understand. And his poor wife, Kathy, too, has been sick, too. And that's important to understand, too. That only complicates the matter further, right? Is here she wants to be taking care of him, the love of her life. And she's ill, too. And so a lot of other people locally have kind of stepped up to kind of help out that family. And so your tweets, your prayers, your thoughts, your good vibes, all that stuff is very much coveted and very much appreciated. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. Man, I love Bulldog Burger Company. I know you do, too. And one of the reasons we love it is because we know exactly what to expect and we get what we pay for. In fact, we typically get more than what we pay for. The portions there are incredibly substantial. If you need a good meal at an affordable price with great service and great locations, look no further than Bulldog Burger Company. I can promise you, if you ask the kids, hey, where do you guys want to eat? Bulldog Burger Company is going to be the answer. And maybe you're not feeling like a burger and everybody else is. Maybe you can have that BLT salad. I prefer it grilled. You may like it fried. I'm not judging. Maybe you like it with ranch or honey mustard. I know those of us from South Mississippi, it's a requirement you get ranch on all of that stuff. But you do you, right? Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. It's even on the menu. It's in writing. Trust the science, as they taught us 5 years ago. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, since we have been together, Mississippi State women's basketball picked up a much-needed win. It's a game we expected to win. It's a game we had to win. And kind of gets us back on track a little bit. There's still a lot left to do. You know, this team now 17-7, 4-6 in the conference, 9-2 at home, and you know it's been a difficult home schedule at times. 4-5 in true road games, and then 4-0 on a neutral floor. So, you know, let's just kind of break this thing down just a little bit, and we'll kind of look ahead to what else is coming. You know, of course, you know, ladies right back in action on Sunday against Alabama. So we'll give you a little bit of a recap of Arkansas, and we'll kind of preview Alabama, and then we'll get into the men. It's a huge, huge men's basketball game on Saturday. Bulldogs win 78-55 over Arkansas, and we talked about the importance of getting the great early start because Arkansas has been very susceptible to first quarter deficits. That's exactly what happened. State comes out 28-17 in the first quarter. Probably more points we wanted to allow there. But from there, State pretty much took control and kept control. A 8-point advantage there in the second period if we win that 21-13. So it's 49-30 at the break. Arkansas gets a 1-point advantage in the third, and then State a 5-point advantage there in the fourth to roll 78-55. Razorbacks dropped to 9-16 overall, 2-8 in the Southeastern Conference. Again, a game we absolutely had to win. We knew Izzy Higginbotham would go off. She did, 26 points. But you know what? Outside of that, there was not much to speak of. Second leading scorer, tied. Three players with 6 points apiece for the Razorbacks. They did pull down 29 rebounds. That may have been a bit of a surprise for me, but we still out-rebounded them 43-29. Very, very balanced scoring night for the Bulldogs. DeBrisha Poe with 16 points. Jerkayla Jordan with 16. Chandler Prater with 14. Medina Okot with a dozen. Destiny McFall off the bench with 11. And a handful of others kind of contributed too. Nia Russell was just 4. You know, one time she was in the starting lineup, but just 14 minutes of action for her. Bulldogs 9-21 from beyond the arc, and DeBrisha Poe kind of setting the pace there, 5-7, also handed out 4 assists and had a couple blocks. Big night for her as she kind of filled up the box score. Jerkayla Jordan, you know, when she's getting complimentary scoring around her, this team is very, very difficult to beat. Bulldogs, 44 points in the paint, 27 off turnovers, 15 second chance points, 12 on the fast break, 17 from the bench. State led throughout. So, good win for the Bulldogs. We'll kind of look ahead now to Alabama. It's again, it's a game that we need to win. And this is a team, too, that could help us kind of be a bit of a net climber. Ranked 23rd in both polls right now. You know, it's important. You know, it's these are home games. And, you know, it's tough to win on the road, but we lost a winnable road game in Missouri. So we're still kind of trying to make that up somewhere. But looking at this Alabama team, 19-5 overall, 6-4 in the conference. They've 10-2 at home, and then 5-3 in true road games, 4-0 in neutral. So 9-3, you know, away from Coleman Coliseum. Let's look at how they got there. They blast Columbus State early on. They double up New Orleans, the Privateers. That's a tough deal. They go to Alabama, A&M, and Huntsville. You don't see that happen very often, but they win that game by 25. They take down Troy. They get Norfolk State by 10. They blow out Alcorn State. They win at Louisiana Monroe by 23. And so a really nice start to the season, even though the quality of competition, not that great. But they get off to a great start. They get Alabama State. They go all the way to Niceville, Florida to play in the Emerald Coast Classic, and they draw Alabama State, who they beat by 50. And then they get Clemson. That's a Power 5 opponent, even though the Clemson Tigers maybe not what they were years ago. Alabama gets them 73-39. They double up Georgia State 98-49. First loss of the year comes on the road at Cal in the SEC-ACC Challenge. It's kind of weird. But Alabama wins their first nine and then drops this game to Cal, who advanced to 8-1 at the time. So it's a quality win. It's just weird that Cal is in the ACC, but that's the world in which we live. Crimson Tide bounces back, takes care of Murray State, 90-63. They get Michigan State in the West Palm Beach Classic, beat them by 15, and then kind of eased by the Richmond Spiders by 7. They get Jacksonville, the Dolphins, 93-46. And then we get into SEC play. We've talked about Florida. I still don't understand how Florida is ever bad in anything, considering their resources and recruiting footprint. But here we are. Alabama gets them in Tuscaloosa by 10. They get Missouri by 19. And then they get Texas. And, man, the Longhorns absolutely wear them out in Austin, Texas, 84-40. Yeah, that's a loud win for Vic and the Longhorns, who were 16-1 at the time. It drops Bama to 15-2. So you begin to think about that. I mean, hey, we're 15-1, they're 15-1. Let's bring our best effort, and Texas certainly did. They go to Ole Miss, Alabama does, and they win in the Pavilion by 6 and then lose to South Carolina 76-58. No shame in that. They blast Arkansas 94-62, and then all of a sudden hit a little bump in the road. Back-to-back losses, they lose at Kentucky, and we know, hey, Kentucky, number one, is a good team. It's a tough place to go play. They lose that game by 9, and then I guess I skipped that Vanderbilt game. They lose to Vandy by 2 in Tuscaloosa and then go to Kentucky and lose by 9. Then they get Georgia to come to their place. They beat them by 15. They go back to Florida, kind of a home-and-home deal, and they get them by 18. And so they've won two games in a row, coming into Starkville with a little bit of advantage momentum-wise. But 1 p.m. tip, it will be broadcast.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
That's on the SEC Network. If you can't make it, we hope that you're going to be in town for Baseball Fan Day, and you can just spend the night and go to the women's game. A lot of good places, too. Go to Boulder Burger Company. You can watch a men's game. Right? Let's get a little deeper inside the numbers here and just kind of see what makes this Alabama team tick a little bit. Scoring, averaging just over 78 points a game, allowing just 60. So pretty good defensive team. Some of that, too, is the quality of competition. You get into SEC play, things always begin to tighten up a little bit. But if we've talked about, there's really not a lot of parity in the league this year. There's a couple of really elite teams, maybe three. Then there's a nice segment in the second tier, and then there's the bottom. And the bottom is well behind the middle of the pack. Alabama shooting almost 47% from the field, giving up just right at 37. Three-point percentage shooting about 38, allowing just 28. It's a good perimeter defense from this team as well. 67% free throw shooting, opponent shooting 72. There is no free throw defense, but You know, not a great free throw shooting team. That could be a factor in a close ball game in our home venue. Rebounding, not really been a strong suit for them, and especially when you consider the quality of competition in the non-conference. They're out-rebounding teams just by three a game. And you go look and see what they did against South Carolina and Texas. It was not great. Dishing out right at 15 assists per game, allowing a dozen. They do turn it over 14.5 times per game. They force 17.5. And again, I wonder how much of that is, you know, the quality of non-conference competition. Things have tightened up a little bit in SEC play. So averaging just under three turnovers more created than given up. So that, you know, the takeaways outweighing the giveaways. Points off turnovers, right at 20 for them and right at 13 for their opponents. They get their hands on the ball a little bit, 8.5 per game, and then they've had seven steals the other way, 113 blocks against just 67. So that's a pretty good differential right there, averaging about two more blocks per game. They're not a huge inside, you know, front court team in that respect, but still did a pretty good job. Sarah Ashley Barker leads Alabama. In a lot of these offensive statistical categories, even though she has missed a little bit of time, it's always a little interesting to see how that all kind of plays out over the course of a season. But averaging 16.8 points per game, and they have four regulars that are averaging in double figures. You know, I don't know that matters more in women's basketball than it really even on the men's side, you know, because you never know who's going to get hot. But on the women's side, when you consistently have three to four scorers out there, it makes you very difficult to defend. Zaya Green, 15.7 points per game. Aaliyah Nye with 14.3. And Essence Cody, 10.8 points per game. But looking at this interesting thing with Nye, 183 three-point attempts. They've only had 538 as a team. She's got 183. Pretty significant. She will put the ball in the air. Zaya Green also with 94, which is second on the team. But Nye, 45%. So basically, one out of every two shots that goes up from beyond the arc for her finds the bottom of the net. So we're going to have to do a good job defending her, kind of making somebody else beat us. That's easier said than done. I mean, they know their system, and they're going to find a way to make the extra pass. So this may be, yeah, a real challenge here for the Mississippi State team defensively. Kind of part of the deal. But they do stretch you out a little bit, no question about it. And looking at conference play here too, just kind of looking at maybe how the numbers have changed. Barker, in conference play, has actually elevated her game, averaging almost 19 points a game. And then Green, 15.9. And then Nye, 13.4. Essence Cody with 10. So four double-digit scorers overall and four in SEC play. And they perhaps don't have the depth that maybe some other teams do, but Diana Collins, Gianna Cunningham, and Eris Lester have all played in all 10 conference games. So it looks like they're going to run maybe about eight. You know, we'll see how that kind of plays out. But you know, Barker has missed some time, so it'll be interesting to kind of see if we can't pull these numbers up and just kind of take a look here, see what's happening with her. Yeah, she hadn't played since February 6th, which was just last night, so it looks like she missed some time back in the early portion of things. But, yeah, she played against Florida and then didn't play again until Vanderbilt. So about 3 weeks of action there where she was absent, but she is back and appears to be, you know, back to full strength. It's always nice to get your leading scorer back down the stretch, right? So a game that we need to get, and again, you look at the numbers, there's only so much you can tell, but the reality of it is this is a game in our home arena. We feel like this team is a contemporary of ours. They've won a couple games in a row. We win last night. What's today? Friday, we won Wednesday night. And so got to figure this thing out. And you start thinking about kind of getting better, you know, thinking about what's left. And we did talk about how the second half of the schedule, things tend to kind of ease up on us just a little bit. You get through this one, And then on Valentine's Day Eve, you're going to travel to Vanderbilt. And maybe that's a little more difficult than it has, but it's been in recent years. But you start thinking, is that a winnable road game? Well, you certainly hope so. And, you know, not having McFaul at Missouri really hurt us. Getting her back and getting her going will be big. And then we head to Florida. Texas A&M comes in here, and the next thing you know, we got the big game against Texas. It's a Thursday tip. And then you finish up at Auburn. And so you look here right now as we sit. You got 6 games left. And you feel like 5 out of 6 are winnable. That's not to say I expect us to win all 5. But I think the only sure loss is Texas. One of the best teams in the country. Currently ranked 4 in one poll and 6 in another. But you think about these road games that you have remaining, and none of those games you look at and say, hey, this is going to be a raucous atmosphere. It's not like we're going, you know, to South Carolina or to LSU and play in a packed house. You know, a lot of these teams are just kind of playing out the string, trying to find a way to position themselves for seeding in the SEC tournament. So as we stand here and think about our own future, Alabama 6-4 in the league, as we mentioned, so they are ahead of us. Vanderbilt 5-5. We're right there at 4-6. And I would venture to say, you know, that we've played, you know, the most difficult part of our schedule. And then you look behind us, you know, the teams that we have left to play. Auburn, a game behind us in the standings, 12-11 overall. We got to go there. We killed them at our place. I expect to get a much better effort from the Tigers when we make that trip to the Plains. Florida is 12-12 and 3-7 in the league. You have to go there. That's a game that we should be able to get. A&M's got to come here. They're 3-7 in the league and 10-12 overall. You just knocked off Arkansas, and of course, Missouri has their one SEC win over us. It's still a burn to saddle. And then Georgia, of course, you know, you took care of them. So, you know, you got some teams right there around you in the standings and some teams behind you in the standings. And again, the last truly difficult game on paper is Texas, who's 23-2, and they're ranked number 4 in the country for a reason. But Alabama's sitting right there at 5th place, but just 2 games ahead of us in the standings. And so that's an important aspect of this thing. Got to find a way to win these games. And again, with 6 remaining regular season games, it's hard to believe, right? Doesn't it just blow your mind? It's like you look forward to this all year long, and all of a sudden you take a breath and look up, and there's 3 weeks to go in the season. It's nuts. I mean, it truly is. But we got to find a way to get at least 4, possibly 5 of those 6 if we really want to make the tournament. Because you start thinking about, you're a 4-6 team right now. You know, with just, you know, half dozen or so games left to play. And so you start thinking about, you know, where you're going to sit. I mean, you know, are we going to be able to make the tournament with a less than 500 record in the SEC? Maybe. But let's say you can find a way to even things up a little bit. Now you feel like you're okay. You know, you feel like if you finish with a winning record in the SEC, considering the strength of the conference this year, but you should be able to make the dance. And after last year, you remember we were in such a great position last year and just kind of faded down the stretch. This year we've got to flip the script and close out really, really strong. And again, with McFaul kind of helping out there and Poe, obviously one of our favorite Meridianites, being able to to kind of stretch things and give Jerkela Jordan some offensive help out there, you've got an opportunity. But that's where things sit. Again, 6 games left. It's nuts to think about it. It really is. 6 games and we're in the SEC tournament. Wouldn't hurt us to win a game or two there too. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. They don't tell you when you're young. You need a seasoned professional. You can trust your mortgage to almost anybody, but you probably shouldn't. 24 years of experience. Blair Chandler, that's the guy. Work with him, get his know-how working for you. He can get you to the closing table when so many others can't. It's a very stressful, convoluted process. You need somebody that knows how to navigate the labyrinth that is underwriting. He structures these loans in the best way to get them approved. Give him a call or text today at 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. That number goes directly to Blair. Not a call center, not a receptionist, directly to Blair. So you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, look no further than Close at Blair. Blair is a season ticket holder in multiple sports. Also a guy, too, that rides a wave of emotion just like you do, placed here in Starkville. He is a bulldog through and through. I like keeping the business in the family whenever we can. All right, Mississippi State released the walkouts and walk-ups today. The walkouts, of course, are for the pitchers. The walk-ups are for the hitters because you walk out of the bullpen and you walk up to the plate. So, good list. I picked my 10 favorites. And some of these are based on the songs that I like. Some are based on songs that I think are very fitting. But here we go. Top 10 Mississippi State baseball walk-ups and walk-outs, according to me. Number 10, it's Ben Davis, who is going to be a bit of a surprise for you. He had a really good, strong first inning today. Had a little bit of a lag a little bit later. Lost the control point a little bit. A lot of that's just mechanics, right? I mean, it's like you go out there and you do what you're trained to do. You get a little confidence, get a little ahead of yourself, and you kind of revert to what you did last year. He didn't pitch a whole lot in the fall. But Ben is going to be a guy that you guys are going to want to know by the end of this year. He decided to go with the Wolf Mother Classic, Joker and the Thief. And if you've watched Hangover, you know that song. If you've been to a Mississippi State sporting event in the last few years, you know that song. You may not know the name of it or who performs it, but it's Wolf Mother, Joker, and the Thief. Gallen Sanders comes in at number 9 with a little ELT, little ELT. The New Orleans Classic from 1992. It's Get the Gat, Get the Gat, Get the Gat. Tell the Calio Posse, Get the Gat, Get the Gat. And it was a big hit and kind of had a resurgence back in 2019 as LSU made their run. Of course, some of the players at LSU like, hey, you old heads, we're not trying to take your song. You know, they had the big White House video and celebrate, of course, when State beat them in 2020. State did the Get the Gat celebration there in the visiting locker room at Tiger Stadium. Number 8, Gavin Black's Walk Out song, kind of bringing Nickelback back in honor of Jake Mangum. It's Burn It to the Ground. It's a great track. I don't care what anybody says, oh, but you listen to Nickelback. Well, so did you. And many of you still do. You just don't admit it. Great track, certainly. All right, number 7, Carson Ligon. Changing it up a little bit this year. Going with the Ted Nugent Classic. What is it, 6.5 minute long song? It's Stranglehold from Uncle Ted Nugent. A guy that has done a lot of things politically over the years. You may not agree with him, but Ted's a guy that raised his family on, you know, meat from animals that he himself killed. All right, number 6, Charlie Foster, who was back on the mound today. There were some people very worried that he didn't pitch last weekend. He did pitch today, and he looked good. And I think there may be a situation where Charlie, rather than just as your Tuesday night guy, I think Charlie may pitch on the weekends. Got some future Friday night guy. He goes with the Stevie Wonder Classic, Superstition. Of course, many of you prefer the Stevie Ray Vaughan version. I prefer the Stevie Wonder version. I don't know if you can replicate perfection. And I love that bass line. You remember when we were kids, we got to see it on Sesame Street? Stevie was a guest, and they played Superstition. It was incredible. You can find that video on YouTube, too, if you want to go reminisce. All right, number 5, a song that you're familiar with from the former runout song at Davis Wade Stadium. I wish we would have left it alone because it fits us, but it's Jacob Pruitt with Metallica's For Whom the Bell Tolls. One bell, two tolls. Great track. I don't know why we changed it. I think Money for Nothing. I don't like Money for Nothing, but nobody asked me. I loved Money for Nothing, but not as a walkout or a runout at football. It doesn't fit. It's just my opinion. All right, number four, Robert Fortenberry, a guy that's going to pitch big innings for State this year too, and he's a very crafty left-hander. Again, throws three variations of the change. He keeps people off the fastball. It's not necessarily a dynamic fastball because he is a wide-bodied guy. He hides the baseball well, and he works off the off-speed, which makes the fastball even a little more, a little more effective. He goes with Renegade from Styx. I don't know if he is a Pittsburgh Steelers fan or not. The Steelers use that song to kind of fire up the crowd in between the third and fourth quarter. Steelers hadn't been what we should be the last several years. I don't know what to expect from Mike Tomlin. I've been a Steelers fan my whole life, but they have made the last few years very uneventful. All right, number three, Noah Sullivan has a walk out as a pitcher and a walk up as a hitter. As a hitter, he is going with the Leonard Skinner Classic Freebird. That will make him some fans right away. Also, Noah Sullivan, named preseason All-American by the National College Baseball Writers Association. Maybe you weren't expecting that. Guy can really swing it. Hadn't had a great week, though, to be honest with you. Hadn't had a great week, but a big strapping right-handed bat. We need some power from the right-hand side. We hope that he can supply some. Ross Highfield's a guy, too, we expect to supply some. He had a big home run to right center today off Pico Cohn. All right, number two, Dane Burns, who's had two really good outings this week. He was a guy that didn't pitch last year. And, again, Mississippi State did a great job kind of keeping him under wraps. He was actually a member of the previous class. He didn't report, but he kind of laid low while he rehabbed. And then he ultimately gets drafted this year, turns down the money, comes to school, big physical lefty. He's going to run out to walk out to Led Zeppelin's Kashmir, which is one of the best Zeppelin songs of all time. So we'll get the Led out at Duty Noble this year. I think you guys are going to be impressed with what you see. Dane Burns, another guy too we expect maybe this year to kind of be a spot reliever and at times maybe a midweek starter, but he is going to be a dude, I think, when you think about next year, and certainly you hope Justin Parker's around next year, but you begin to think about, hey, the pieces you have this year, better than you had last year, but you may already have the majority of next year's weekend rotation on campus. I think Charlie Foster and Dane Burns both are in contention to be weekend starters next year. Yeah. Number one, and I got to go with the weekend starter from this year, I expect Pico Cohn to be your game one opening day starter on the bump. Outside of that home run today, he was exceptional. And that's going to happen, right? When you compete, every so often somebody's going to run into something. Pico has never changed up on us. He is a defender of the denim jean blacketed faith. It's Motley Crue's Kickstart My Heart. It's your number one track today. Anytime that we can do some Motley, it's a great thing. But I love these songs, man. And I love to get the stories behind them. But it's clear that a lot of these kids were raised with musical families. It's true. A lot of classic rock makes the list. I think it's a good thing. I'm excited about the season. Reminder, Fan Day tomorrow. Come to the scrimmage and then come to Fan Day. The kids all want to meet their favorite players, and there's so many new faces. You'll get a chance to kind of meet them. And again, I think not just for this year, but I think kind of the nucleus towards next year. I don't think we're going to have to be quite so reliant on the portal next year. We'll see how the draft treats us. Dylan Cup will be a draft-eligible sophomore. Interested to see where he goes. Ace Reese not draft-eligible, so he'll be back. Sawyer Reeves will exhaust his eligibility, but we got so many guys over there that can play middle infield. Reed Stallman and Hunter Hines there at first. What does that mean long-term? I don't know. Ross Highfield will be a draft-eligible guy this year too. But kind of working through it, you feel like, yeah, you're going to have to hit the portal for a few guys, and certainly if you're Mississippi State, you ought to be able to go out there and get a good weekend starter, maybe not a bona fide Friday night guy, but a guy that can help you on weekends. So I think, again, this is a roster that not only will be very good this year, but I think the younger pieces, especially on the pitching side, kind of sets you up well for next year. Then you think about, you know, Landis Davila is a guy, too, that well, he walks out the Buffalo Soldier from Bob Marley. I kind of dig that. But that guy there is probably going to be on the future of your media guide. That guy is going to be a star at Mississippi State, too. We'll play a little bit this year, probably not get as many hacks as he'd like. But that's a guy next year you look at and say, hey, he is a sure bona fide starter for next year. And we'll talk a little more baseball before we get out of here. But those are my 10 favorite walkouts and walk-ups. I think that's important to differentiate. There is a difference between the two. But I think when you begin to consider how important music is as part of the game day atmosphere, it's good. One of the things that I want to say, too, everybody else gets to make their own complaints. I am not a favor of the Go-Go's and Belinda Carlisle being played at Duty Noble. I don't know how you feel, but I'm not a big fan of that. Maybe it's just me. Like we did Heaven is a Place on Earth, as we do the visiting lineup, I don't get it. And I know people are trying to kind of equate, well, Duty Noble is like heaven, you know. It just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't. Now, if you want to be silly, you know, as you do the opening lineup for the other team, I get something. But, you know, by and large, you know, baseball is kind of a gentleman's game, so you don't really do that sort of stuff. But tonight, or today, it's the scrimmage. We had kind of a dress rehearsal, you know, had most of the crew there, you know, handling some of the graphics on the Jumbotron, and also to having so much of that, you know, just the game day stuff, you know, ran through the ads. You know, it's a good time to do it. So when we get in there next week, got a pretty good idea of what we're doing. So if there is a problem, we can address it this week. But this time next week, hopefully we're celebrating our first win of the year and posting our content. Expected that game, you know, we'll see what happens with the weather, but 4 p.m. is what we're expecting. You know, Chris, not a big fan of the night game and in February, and I'm not either. I mean, I know people are like, well, you know, think about the fans. You know, you got to think about the health of your team. And having guys pitch in cold weather isn't always the best thing. But should be good weather, but it is going to get a little bit chillier next weekend. You know, we've got some rain coming through the area midweek. We've enjoyed these warmer temperatures as of late. And that's one thing about Mississippi is you never know what you're going to get in February. There have been some times that we've had some games. We played in frigid and freezing weather. But should be great weather for Fan Day tomorrow, with a low of 60 and a high of 77. Next week on Friday, the high is only going to be 59, so it's going to be a little chillier. And then, you know, low just above freezing on Friday and Sunday. And we're expecting a little bit of rain on Saturday, so kind of be ready to be a little flexible with the start time on Saturday. But the current expectation is first pitch, 4 o'clock Friday, 2 o'clock Saturday, 1 o'clock on Sunday. But, of course, we can move things around with that middle game, depending on what the weather looks like by the time we get there. We got Dr. Brown and that crew doing an amazing job. So I always think about how many rainouts have we had in recent years. I mean, I only remember one last year when we got to the ballpark and didn't play a game. You know, Dr. Brown just rarely ever misses. You know, there's a reason you've got so many meteorologists around the country that are Mississippi State educated, just because we do such an amazing job. I think I saw, was a graphic came out this week? 1 in 3 on-air meteorologists are Mississippi State educated. If that doesn't make you post your chest out a little bit and pride, I don't know what will. It's pretty cool, right? So be mindful of that. Also, Mississippi State has tweeted out kind of a game day guide. There's always a little change here and there. But we have looked forward to this for so long. Of course, we get the benefit of going to fall scrimmages and the spring scrimmages. Many of you turn out for that. But for other people, it's going to be their first look at the Bulldogs. That's one of the reasons, you know, we encourage you, if you can this weekend, come out. And that way, you know, you don't have to sit around and wait after ball games. You can go over to Palmero Center after the Saturday scrimmage and have an opportunity to, you know, to get in the face of Hunter Hines a little bit, right? Yeah, that's That's all part of the deal. We didn't expect that guy back, man. I'm glad he is back, expecting a big year out of him. And I think because of the pieces around him, he will be a guy that has kind of a bounce back to form. Last year, batting average-wise, you know, the worst of his career. And I think some of that, too, was maybe a little bit of draftitis. You know what I mean? Just really pressing a little bit too hard. And there were some times, too, especially later in the year, I felt like a lot of the burden of this offense fell to Dakota Jordan and Hunter Hines. And I don't know how well they handled it. But I think with more length in the lineup, Hunter will have a chance just to kind of relax a little bit. He's hit a few dingers here in the spring. So hopefully you guys can turn out. Again, tomorrow, great weather expected in the greater Starkville area. Come be a part of things. You'll be glad you did. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Campus Bookmart, been here forever and a day. When you're looking for Mississippi State merchandise, look no further than Campus Bookmart. They can cure what ails you when it comes to your gift buying needs. Whether it be a diploma frame or perhaps a housewarming gift or a way to detail out your own fan cave, your office, your RV, your pet, whatever, they're going to have it when other people aren't. Miss Kathy Brown, an incredible buyer, she knows what maroon looks like, right? She's not going to have you looking silly or have your kids out there walking around in a purple or a crimson shirt with the Mississippi State logo on it. Why would you want that, right? She knows our school colors. And if you can't make it to town to see their smiling faces, let me encourage you to visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75, any order less than $75. Absolutely incomplete. Okay, men's basketball game. It's one, man, it's, we've made this a much bigger game because we haven't been able to close here as of late. Of course, we've had a couple games gotten away from us. Bulldogs now 16-6. And now you kind of worry about getting to 20 wins. I don't know if we thought early in the year we'd be sweating that out a little bit, but we are. Bulldogs 4-5 in the conference, 4-2 on true road games, and 4-1 on a neutral floor. So 8-3 away from the hump, and then 8-3 at home. So we've been almost as good, well, basically statistically as good away from our home venue as we have been in it. And some of that, too, is the fact that, you know, we've had some difficult games at home and some games that we feel like we should have won, especially Kentucky and Alabama. But you start working through this. You know, you get off to the 2-0 start in league play and think, okay, all right, we're good. Now we can go through this gauntlet. And if we split, we come out the other side of this in good shape. Well, we didn't do that. We dropped the next two to Kentucky and Auburn. Bounce back and beat Ole Miss in overtime, then lose Tennessee, beat South Carolina, and then lose to Alabama, and then lose to Missouri. So a game beneath what we expected or hoped for at the minimum, right? We, at the very least, we thought we'd beat Ole Miss and Missouri and South Carolina. We knew we had our hands full at Kentucky and Alabama but we felt like, you know what, hey, if we can get one of those, that really puts us in a good position. Well, that's just not the case. So we'll travel to Georgia Saturday, 5 p.m. tip central. 5 p.m. tip central. So if you're coming to fan day, you can take in a scrimmage, get your pictures taken care of, and then run to Bulldog Burger Company and watch the game or listen to it on the way home. And then on Tuesday, you got Florida coming in here, and now you start thinking about how important these two games are. Road trip to Ole Miss is playing exceptionally well, and we beat them up here, and it really felt like we should have beat them worse than we did. A&M comes in, we go to Oklahoma, go to Alabama, that's tough. LSU late, Texas comes in Arkansas. So again, we're going to play till March 8th, but you know, you start looking at this and say, okay, where are the sure wins and where are the sure losses? I don't know right now if I look at this and say there is a sure loss. Now, I think that road trip to Oxford is going to be difficult. And, of course, the trip to Alabama is going to be difficult. Not always a great matchup for us. But, yeah, some good basketball left to be played. But we need to be playing our best basketball at the end of February. And as Chris Jan said in the media briefing on yesterday, we got to start winning some games, and that starts on Saturday. Let's take a quick look at Georgia. They've been really good at home, And Jacob Bain did a feature today with one of our writers from the Georgia side. It's a VIP feature. If you're a subscriber, and you certainly should be, you can go read that. Kind of getting some insight into this Georgia basketball team. They're 16-7 overall, but 13-1 at home. 4-6 in the conference, but again, very good at home. 1-5 in true road games, 2-1 on neutral floor. So 3-6 overall away from Stegman Coliseum. They open up with a couple of exhibitions, and then they slip by Tennessee Tech. Is it opening night jitters? I don't know, but they win that game by 5. They get Texas Southern handily. They get by North Florida. They go to Georgia Tech, win that game on the road, a rivalry game. You never know how it's going to go. They win by 8. They blast Alabama A&M. They lose to Marquette down in the Bahamas at the Atlantis Paradise Island Resort Tournament. They bounce back to beat St. John's by 3. The Jacksonville Dolphins head into Stegman. They get beat 102-56. And then Georgia takes care of Notre Dame handily by 21 there in Athens. Grand Canyon rolls in, makes it an interesting ball game. It's part of the holiday Hoopsgiving event in Atlanta. They win 73-68 due to the Bulldogs of Georgia. They blast Buffalo 100-49. They get Charleston Southern 81-65. South Carolina State made it a game. Georgia able to kind of outlast them and win by 7. And you get into SEC play. They go to Ole Miss and lose by a dozen. And the Rebels hold them at just 51 points. Yeah, that's a good effort by the Ole Miss defense for sure. Somehow, some way, they find a way to beat Kentucky 82-69. And that's when people said, hey, this league is bonkers, right? They get Oklahoma 72-62. So now all of a sudden you're 2-1 headed to Tennessee and feel like, hey, it's a big ball game. You lose by 18. And there are going to be a lot of teams that roll into Thompson Bowling Arena this year that kind of get the business end of a beating. They get up off the mat at home and suffer their only loss of the year at Stegman, and they lose to Auburn. And you know how great Auburn is. Georgia nearly pulls this thing off. They only lose 70-68. Pretty crazy thing. 70-68, and Georgia actually wins the second half. But it's so interesting, you know, kind of watching how this thing all played out. It was a game. I mean, it's like they just kind of kept hanging around and hanging around. Auburn just couldn't put them away. You know, I'm looking at the notes here now, but it's like it was within single digits pretty much throughout the second half. So they kind of hung in there with them. And again, you know how talented all this Auburn team is. And it looks like they trailed by 10 after a three-pointer right there at the 10-minute mark. And you feel like, okay, well, that'll be the dagger. But they just keep coming, and they keep coming, and they keep coming. And then you look up late, and you know, you've got a chance. If you can get some stops, you've got a chance. But ultimately, they couldn't. They do cut it down to like a six-point game with about 4 minutes to play. And just, you know, simply Auburn just kind of takes over here. And again, it's a four-point game right at 3 minutes. But, you know, that's the thing about this Auburn team. They can almost score at will, and they made the plays to win the game down the stretch. Georgia ended up fouling some. Auburn makes their free throws and ultimately puts the game away. But it's an impressive loss. And it also demonstrates how difficult it is to go play in Stegman. They lose that game, again, barn burner of a game, and then they lose at Arkansas by 3. And this is not a great Arkansas team. They've had some success as of late. It's first year under Calipari, pretty much a brand new roster. But going to Bud Walton with that environment is difficult. And they made a game of it. And then they go to Florida, and they lose at Florida by 30. So the losing streak extends to 4 games. And then people think, okay, these guys are finished. South Carolina, of course, not playing well this year. Goes into Stegman. That proves to be a bit of a slump buster for Georgia. They win that game by 11. And then they go to Coleman Coliseum and get beat 90-69 by Alabama. And then LSU, of course, you had the Matt McMahon experience. Not exactly what people anticipated. And that's a thing we talk about with basketball. You know, one great class can turn things around, and the LSU sanctions for the Will Wade nonsense, weren't nearly as bad as people expected and not nearly as bad as they should have been. But McMahon is struggling in the Southeastern Conference. And so now the Bulldogs will head in. Again, 5 p.m. tip Central. Let's kind of get inside the numbers here and kind of see what Georgia looks like as a team. I don't know if you've watched them this year. Maybe you have. Watch some of that game with Florida. And you know how it is when you're flipping around at night, all of a sudden things pop up on Twitter and it's like, hey, let me take a look. You know, what am I missing here? Georgia averaging 76 points a game, giving up 67. And again, I think some of that too is kind of playing down a non-conference competition, but playing up to conference competition. Again, they've had some very tightly contested games and some other ones that kind of got away. Shooting 46.5% from the floor, but giving up about 40%. Three-point percentages, you know, not a prolific three-point shooting team. And that's a great thing for Bulldog fans, right? Because it seems like the last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of time, a little difficulty covering the perimeter. So they're shooting right at 32%, giving up about 30%, making right at 6.7 three-pointers per game. I think we could live with that. If you set the over-under at 7 and we hold them under 7, I think we're going to feel like we got a good chance to win this ballgame. Shooting right at 71% from the free-throw line. Rebounding has been good, not great. They're out-rebounding opponents by 5.6 per game. And again, you factor that in with all the non-conference competition. You expect it to be pretty even in SEC play. It's a much different deal in non-conference. Handing out 13.2 assists, allowing 11. Turnovers have been a problem. They're giving it up as often as they're taking it away. 307 turnovers for Georgia's credit and 308 against. So, you know, the margin, it's basically six one way, half a dozen the other. Points off turnovers, they're getting 15.3 and giving up 14.5. So, again, kind of indicative of a team that's middle of the pack. 191 steals for, 188 against. So, again, same thing. 122 blocks, about 5.5 a game, and then 3.6 against. And some of that, too, is, you know, you should be able to out-athlete people. You should. All right, Asa Newell is the straw that stirs the drink, 15.3 points per game. Not a prolific three-point shooter. He will shoot it a little bit to kind of keep you honest, but just 54 attempts. Silas DeMary Jr., 11 points a game, shooting about 36% from beyond the arc, 39% from the floor. Dakota LeFou, the most prolific of the three-point shooters, 121 shots skyward, 44 in the bottom of the net, right at 36%. But they will tee it up and shoot it a little bit. Again, they're kind of measured in what they do. But, you know, they're not a big three-point shooting team. And that's going to be a big part of this thing for us. You know, we're going to have to defend within the paint, you know, really well. And we've done a good job not really getting shoved around in the paint. And that's one of the things that we all worried about a little bit, right, before the season even began. We began thinking, hey, you know, we don't have a lot of girth at the five. So what are we going to do when we play teams that can run offense through the post? Part of the deal. We talked about Newell a little bit. He is a 6'11 freshman out of Monteverde Academy there in Destin, Florida. Also one of the team's more prolific rebounders, pulling down 158 on the year, right at 7 a game. And then some to Cyril coming off the bench, or Cyril. You have to forgive me. A native of Nigeria, also a 6'11 center, a freshman. But, you know, they've got some length, but they don't have some girth. And so I think we're going to be able to match up. You know, we need Nwoko, obviously, and I think Keyshawn Murphy could have a good game against these guys. Kind of looking at the individual numbers in SEC play. Just one double-digit score on the year, and that's Asa Newell. 15 points in SEC play, everybody else averaging less than double figures. And so that's significant, I think. They've had 4 of 5 starters start all 10 SEC games. Lawrence and LeFou have kind of split the other 10. But not a lot of depth, I guess you could say. I mean, they're playing about 8 deep. Dylan James has played a little bit, but not getting big minutes for them. Also not putting a lot of shots in the air. You know, 26 attempts. But, you know, by and large, this looks to be kind of a half-court team that wants to make some plays in the paint. So we'll see, how things go. But I think this is a game Mississippi State is capable of winning. And I'll tell you this, it's a game we have to win. And I think, you know, listen, I still believe this is a tournament team. If you lose this one, this is when I start to have some doubts. Not to suggest that the Georgia game is going to determine our season, but you start wondering about what's left. You know, where are we going to get these wins? You know, Florida comes in. That could be a chance. You know, again, probably one of the, you feel like at some point we're going to get that SEC caliber signature win. Going to Oxford is going to be difficult. We've played well up there before, but it's going to be tough. You should be able to get A&M at home. Going to Oklahoma, you know, you go on the road, who knows? Going to Alabama has been a house of horrors at times. And then you get LSU and Texas here, so you start thinking about, hey, those are games we should be able to win, or we have to win. And then you got to go to Arkansas. And the way that they appear to be improving, you know, that game doesn't seem to be maybe nearly as competitive as we thought, you know, a week or two ago. Kind of look at the SEC standings here, too. Auburn, still number one, 9-0, won 14 in a row, 21-1 overall. Alabama, you know what they've got. And you know we probably let them off the hook, but they're 8-1 in conference play, just a game behind Auburn. Then there's Florida, tied with Missouri for third. And so, again, if you're thinking that Florida team's going to come in here and just kind of lay down, you're kidding yourself. They're 19-3 overall, and all those losses have come in conference play. You know what Missouri did when they got here? A&M, you know, 17-5. You know, that it's a little bit homeristic to think, hey, we should win that game. I hope that we do. But you start running this thing too, like Ole Miss, 6-4, 17-6 overall. And I remember beginning of the year when Ole Miss was ranked in the top 25, some of our people, some of our basketball message board experts said, oh, that's wrong. We should be ranked and they shouldn't be. Well, I think 10 games in the conference play, I think it would say that the prognosticators had it correct. Maybe you don't like hearing that, but that's the reality of it. But, you know, again, this Georgia team, you're kind of right there behind us a little bit, or just a half a game behind us because we had the, the break. But the good thing is we're going to play three of the four bottom teams in the league, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and LSU. And you're going to get LSU at home. And so, again, you start counting wins here and you start thinking about, okay, you got to find a way to get to 20 wins. And, again, I ask you right now, take off the maroon glasses and say, okay, where do those four come from? And, again, this kind of count here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 left. So you go 4-5 down the stretch. Man, I don't know. You go 4-5 down the stretch. That gets you to 20 wins. Makes you 20-11. But makes you 8-10 in the conference. Yeah, depending on how the net works out, that may be enough to get you in, or it may, when you get into the SEC tournament, you know, maybe that puts you in a position where you feel like you've got to get a game. But I still feel like this is a tournament team. But, again, there's not a lot of gimmies the rest of the way. And many of you will head that to Nashville for the SEC tournament. But one of the things that concerns me is, you know, these road games that are remaining. You know, you work through it. Got to go to Georgia tomorrow. Go to Oxford. Go to Oklahoma. Go to Alabama. And then go to Fayetteville. You know, if we're going to get to where we want to go, we're going to have to earn it on the road. Got to protect our home court, but we're going to have to find a way to win some road games in order to make the NCAA tournament. I think you guys see it the way that I do. And listen, it's okay for us to admit that the season maybe hadn't gone as well as we'd hoped. That's okay to admit. But it's also important to point out we still got some games left, and this team is capable of being competitive or winning the majority of those games. You find a way to go, you know, 5-4 down the stretch. That gets you 21 wins and gets you 500 in the conference. I don't think you're worried at all about making the tournament. You would feel a lot better with a game in Nashville. But the reality of it is that's how close we are. That's how significant that Missouri loss was. It could really be the difference. You finish 500 in this league, I think you can easily make a case that Mississippi State deserves to be in. And again, I think the only sure win right now is probably LSU. You know that's how I see it. Maybe you see it differently. But, yeah, we're going to have to earn it. And I do think Chris Jans and his team is up for it. My confidence in Chris Jans has not faded, period. And, again, I'll kind of call it as I see it. There are some times I don't think we manage end-of-game scenario as well. I've said that many times, and that boils down to coaching. But there are other times that we've managed it pretty well, and then the players just haven't executed. So there's enough blame to go around. But we can still salvage something this season, still find a way to get in the tournament, and you never know. And I don't think anybody really wants to see us in round one, do you? I wouldn't think so. And then you never know what's going to happen that first weekend of the tournament. You absolutely never know what's going to happen. But again, I don't think anybody, even the most optimistic of our Mississippi State fans, expected this team to win the SEC or even really contend for the SEC. I think we really thought we'd finish in the top half of the league. And if maybe we get to fifth or sixth in the league and feel really good about our seeding going into March Madness. But everything is still in front of us. And I think about those things, about Chris Jans, the last couple of years, has done a really good job kind of down the stretch making Mississippi State a very difficult out. And I still think that signature win in the SEC at some point is coming. You begin to think about what it would mean for the net if you go win at Ole Miss. Right? Or you win at Alabama. This would be extremely significant when they begin to review our resume. But again, I'm excited about what is to come. But we have got to win tomorrow. We have to win against Georgia. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by Historic Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. If you're bringing a large group to town, don't go get five or six hotel rooms. Stay at the Historic Vegas Clubhouse. It's going to save you some money, and you're going to have a better time, right? You look so forward to making these trips. Don't overthink it. Just Google Historic Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can look through all the pictures of all the amenities, of all the great areas that you can stay and congregate. Whether it be that great living room area, the full-service kitchen, you got the wet bar area, a little bit of a patio back there, that back porch area, the fire pit area, and let's be honest, conversations around a fire are just more meaningful. I don't make the rules, but that's the reality of life. So check it out, and then after you Google, you'll see some booking options pop up, Airbnb, VRBO. You can go that route if you want to. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website by using promo code BSR10. That's BSR, the number 10, 10. Get 10% off your stay. Beautiful Steve Robertson saving you 10% off your stay at the Historic Vegas Clubhouse. So whether it's a work group, maybe you're bringing a group up here, maybe it's a work retreat, you'll have some common areas to work and you can kind of retreat to your own private quarters. But the good thing is having an opportunity to stay at a super cool place, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. So whether you got some vacation time to spend or maybe you just want a weekend with the people you care about the most. We talk about that all the time. We don't get together enough, and then we don't get together enough, right? We continue to not get together. So you be the leader within your friend or family group and begin to do some research about staying at Historic Vegas Clubhouse. You'll be glad you did. Again, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. Okay, one of the reasons that we go to the scrimmages is to get you guys some intel. We want to know what the team's going to look like or what we expect it to look like. It wasn't a great first inning today. It's a 4-1 game after one. It ends up being a 6-4 ball game when it's all said and done. Pico, again, gives up the one hit early on, the home run to Ross Highfield. Carson, a little bit shaky early, settled down after the first inning, ended up working, I guess, 3 1/3, something like that. You're starting to stretch guys out a little bit. You get in the next week, you're hoping to get 4 or 5 from them. And, you know, we'll kind of see. Everybody will be on a pitch count next weekend. But I'm a little concerned. Last three starts have not been great starts for Carson. Of course, he has kind of settled down, but a little bit early in these games, he's been hit around. It's one thing if he was walking the ballpark, but he's pounding the zone and he's getting hit. And sometimes that happens. You know, when mechanics break down a little bit, you tend to overthrow thinking about the radar gun. That fastball flattens out a little bit. And I think that's kind of what's happening with him. He's got to kind of find the off speed. When you can throw the off speed or the breaker for a strike, it keeps people off the fastball. And so not ready to give up on him by any stretch. But I don't know at this point that I would say that he's made the jump in live scrimmages that maybe I anticipated. Now, analytically, he's tremendously better than he was last year. And those of you that got to go to the men's clinic, you saw those numbers too. You know, he's up 4 or 5 miles per hour per pitch, and his spin rate is much better. And he's also kind of tinkering with that sinker a little bit too. And so that's one too that if he can get some swing and miss on, will keep people off the fastball, make him a little bit more dynamic. But that's a concern for me. As I begin to think about next weekend, if I had to call it today, I think it's Pico, Carson, and probably Stone Simmons. I think that's probably, and I may feel differently next week, but that's how I feel today. We'll see how things go. But, those are three veteran guys that have been with you for multiple years. So it's not a transfer guy that you're expecting to kind of show up and you don't know how he's going to react on game day. But, you know, Carson, again, goes 1-0 last year. But let's be honest, there were some relief appearances last year that just weren't a lot to write home about. And so you hope that what's happening in the pitching lab will translate to what's expected on the field. So that will be something to watch as we get into next weekend. As I've shared many times on this show, I think the bullpen of this team is going to be dynamic. I think it's the best bullpen we've had since 2021, and I don't know that we've got a Landon Sims. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and tell you right now, we don't have a Landon Sims. Traded some text messages with him last night. He's very optimistic about the season. He's out there trying to win a job, you know, spring training. And you know, we got a lot of Bulldogs in spring training right now, but I love the fact too that we're not just relying on one or two guys. You know, that's kind of how it's felt at times. You go back to 2023. And Nate Dolm was, you know, your best regular pitcher. Then you had Aaron Nixon, who kind of emerged late as he got healthy to be a really good closer for us. And then, you know, you lose him. You get through the draft in 23 and think, okay, we got Nixon back, and then he signs a free agent deal. So you went through last year without a closer. Then you lose Stone Simmons again. He was a guy that could have worked on the back end too. And so we had to kind of do it by committee. You know, Tyson Harden, Tyler Davis. We'll do it by committee this year too. But to be fair, I think the ceiling for the guys that we have on the back end this year is higher. As I mentioned on Wednesday's show, Nate Williams was filthy. Today, Mekhi Grant was. And Mekhi Grant got a start here a couple weekends ago, had the rough first inning. But the stuff was dynamic, and he bounces back. And that second inning of working was really good. He was really good today. Got a 3-4 pitch mix, kind of depending on how he's feeling that day. And that's a guy, too, we were expecting some big things from last year, tears the UCL in fall, and it wasn't a situation of overuse. I think he had two outings of an inning apiece, and in the second outing is when he gets hurt. You know, it's just now it just seems like a matter of when rather than if with a lot of these guys, especially guys that throw high velo. But he sticks it, and when he is a guy that can throw that fastball for a strike, it makes life very difficult on hitters because of the fact that there is some tunneling action with the breaking stuff. And so it looks like a fastball. He is a long, very physical athlete. And that's one of the things that I think about, one of the things that we have been missing really since 2021 is the big physical presence on the mound. The guy that can, it's long, wide, strong, that can hide the baseball and then get down the slope. And we didn't really do a great job getting down the slope in 21. We just had some very dynamic arms and Will Bednar and Sims and at times Christian McLeod. But I think this group, by and large, is a much more physical and athletic group. And I would put Mekhi Grant at the top of that list. And so when you begin to think about what he brings to the table, and the fact, too, you got Charlie Foster, who is a bigger kid, but he needs to fill his frame out a little bit. But Charlie coming out of the bullpen on weekends from the left-hand side, and I think that's one of the strengths of this team, is lefties. I think that is a significant part of this roster. And how many times in the last few years have you had like one or two guys? I'm like, Cole Cheatham was a guy that had to get some big innings for us. And probably, in all due respect to Cheatham, you know, probably the guys that are here now, maybe a little more talented. And there were times, too, that I thought Cole was outstanding for State, and other times maybe not so much. But when you begin to kind of work through this thing and think about how we can match up and throw left-handers and then have some left-handed juice left, you know, like Nolan Stevens, right? He's a two-way guy. He's had a pretty good week, too. You know, in the first couple of weeks of spring, I didn't think he was great. I think he's had a really good week this week at the plate. Pitched a little bit too, I guess on Tuesday night. And so I think, again, he's a guy that maybe is kind of rounding into form as we get a little bit closer. Lefty. Charlie Foster, lefty. And I've bragged about this kid now since the day that he committed. Love his game, 6'3", 190 pounds. But he is a little bit lanky right now. Pico Kong, 6'4", 200 pounds. Again, another physical guy. And Pico can pitch with a little finesse, too. He's not just a fireballer. I mean, he's a guy that can really get you and made Ace Reese look bad today, and that's a big accomplishment in and of itself. And then you think about Luke Dotson, two-way guy last year, PO this year, 6'4", 210 pounds, had a really good outing on Tuesday, really good outing. And so you have some confidence there. And Robert Fortenberry has been absolutely filthy. And he's a guy, too, at times, you know, when he can't get the breaking stuff and the changeup stuff in the zone, you know, people are just going to sit fastball. So it's very important that he's able to – he kind of pitches backwards. You know, he wants to throw the breaker. He wants to throw the changeup to get you out in front and then finish you with a fastball. You know, he's not a guy that's going to throw the fastball to get your guess in and then, you know, throw the changeup to get you out in front. It's a little bit of backwards pitching there for him. And he's a 6 foot, 220-pound guy. But he's, you know, he's not maybe as athletic as some of the other guys, but he is a wide-bodied, and I hate to use the term squatty, but he is kind of that wider build. Bradley Lofton, we hadn't seen anything from him this spring. Not sure what's going to happen with him, but, you know, if you find a way to get him going, that's a guy that's got first-round talent. And Dane Burns, I mentioned him earlier. Another guy, another left-handed pitcher that has had a great week. Guess 6'5", 220. Very physical guy. Dad was a pro hockey player. You know, this is a guy that kind of gets after it. Wes Pritchard, one of the last signees in this class. 6'3", 165 pounds, and has gotten out there and competed pretty well. And so, again, you run through all these lefties, and you begin to think about, you know, how many times have we had this much depth when it comes to softballs? I would say not recent memory. And so I love the pieces that we have. And, you know, the lefty-lefty thing is always – the splits are always so important. And when you've got guys out here, when you can roll lefties out there over and over and over again that have a variety, right? That's one of the things that I thought we really got caught up with in 22 and 23 with the end of the Foxhall experience, right? We were basically a ride-and-slide team. Right, you throw the rising fastball, throw the slider, and you try to replicate that with guys not named Will Bednar and Landon Sims, and then you have some, you know, disastrous results because you've become very predictable. I think Justin Parker is a guy, number one, his pitch calling has been different, but you also have a much wider array of talent to work with. So that's not necessarily about Fox, as it is maybe – you know, praise for Parker. I love Scott Foxhall, very grateful to Scott, but I think we got in a situation with some injuries that we had to just kind of stick with what we knew and with what we had, and it didn't work out the way we wanted. But this could be a very dynamic bullpen. And again, I think, you know, I don't think there's a lot to consider about kind of settling roles in the bullpen. I think between Hungate, Black, and Nate Williams, if he continues his ascension, I think you're good in eighth, ninth inning. What do you do to get there? I think you've got more than enough arms, depending on your scouting report, to get you there. You just, again, you get 4 to 5 innings out of your starters, and that's what I expect the first month of the season. You know, the target is probably 4 or 5 innings, probably cap everybody at 80, maybe 90 pitches, and we'll see how things go. But that's not really the concern that it was the last couple of years, because you've got enough people to eat up those middle innings. So there's reason for optimism when you begin to think about that. And again, you know, we knew that Mekhi Grant was a bit of an X factor, right-hander, but again, big physical athlete, and a guy that was, you know, it was a big deal for us that he turned down the pros to come to college, and now we kind of get the benefit of you know, him having 2 years under Parker to kind of study and learn. And again, a guy that really, when he gets down the slope, it's very intimidating, right? It's big time SEC pitching. And how many times, maybe in the last decade, have we not had that physical presence? When you look at this team getting off the bus, they're going to look like a big league college baseball team. This is a team that has size and strength, positionally and pitching-wise. And so I really think, you know, and again, I go back to 21. How many times are you like, oh, I can't wait to get into the bullpen because that's where our better arms are? And I would venture to say you got to figure out who you can trust. But even in 21, you know, you had, you know, you Parker Stinnett, you had Jackson Fristo, guys that were still kind of figuring this thing out. I think the floor for the guys that you have this year in the pen is higher. We'll see what the ceiling looks like, but I think the floor is higher, and I'm excited. And again, we're a week away, and so we'll have scrimmages on Saturday and Sunday. Hope that you can be in town for those. Again, we'll reiterate, scrimmage tomorrow after the scrimmage is over. Scrimmage first pitch around 12:15. We'll head over to Palmero, get your pictures made. Let the kids get happy. Let them sign, you know, get some signed posters and meet their favorite players. And then you can head home, or you can spend a night, you know, watch the men's basketball game, and then come back out for the scrimmage on Sunday. It's up to you. But a chance to come to Starkville, get your first look at the Bulldogs, and the next thing you know, we get right back into game week, and we're going to have Lamonis Monday. To kind of preview the Manhattan Jaspers. First meeting ever between these two programs. And so as we get deeper into the week, we'll preview the Jaspers. I'll do some research and kind of figure out, you know, who's back and that sort of stuff. I enjoy doing that. But with the portal, it makes it a little more difficult, right? Because you look back and say, oh, this guy was really good last year. Oh, he went to portal. Why isn't he back? Well, transferred out. And it's a little harder to find that information than you might think. But nevertheless, that's our plan as we get into Monday. So we'll get through the Lamonis presser, and then we'll come back and hopefully get you a show recorded Monday afternoon, and hopefully not Monday night, so you have to listen to it on Tuesday. That's the benefit of doing this thing 3 days a week, is give you plenty of preview time. But, guys, it's here. You know, it's here. And my wife shared earlier, in all caps, 1 week away, college baseball, woo-hoo. And that's how I feel too, woo-hoo. But I can tell you, as a guy that has followed this team throughout the offseason, we tracked all the summer numbers, did our best to talk to Major League Baseball scouts and other people around college baseball to get a true analysis of the guys we got in the portal, get into fall scrimmages, and then now into preseason. And so I feel like we've got a pretty good handle. And, you know, this, remember last year I told you guys, as we got into the fall, I said, I'm cautiously optimistic. By the end of the spring, I said, I'm optimistic about this team. Well, I entered the fall optimistic about this team. And I remember driving home from Charlottesville. I was terrified, thinking about, man, we have to replace so much. Well, we have. And I think in many respects, we have upgraded. I don't think we haven't replaced Dakota Jordan. We don't have a Dakota Jordan on this team. You know, we don't have a guy with a first-round grade positionally on this team that's draftable this year. And you think about how physical Dakota was and how great he was as an outfielder and the major league arm that he has. There's a reason that guy signed for millions of dollars. But we don't have that guy back. But my hope is we can get the Hunter Hines of 2023 back because there's more pieces around him. And I don't think that it all has to kind of fall to his shoulders. But I think you're going to like this team. And today we pretty much, I think we've settled who the first team is and who the second team is. And I think, you know, Reed Stallman is a factor in left field too. And I think that gives you the ability to slide Bryce Chance to center. Now, is Bryce as rangy as Michael O'Brien? No. But I do think that he is a guy offensively that is still ahead of Michael O'Brien, who is a true sophomore, had a good summer. But when you begin to kind of work through things, you begin to kind of think, okay, who are our best nine hitters and how do we arrange them defensively to give us the best chance to win? And, you know, again, today it was Stallman in left, Chance in center, and Stevens in right. And Stallman has really hit the ball well. And again, Nolan Stevens had a good week. And that's the thing, too. There's a reason you play these scrimmages, right? People begin to kind of weed themselves out a little bit. And the cream always rises to the top. And so if I had to call it today, it's high fill behind the plate, and I don't think there's any question there. I know other people would disagree. I don't think there's any question. And he had another caught stealing today. You threw a seed right to second base, right to the bag. Bang, bang, play. You get him out. Ace Reese at third. Dylan Cup at short. Sawyer Reeves at second. Hunter Hines at first. You put Stallman out there left. Chance in center. Stevens in right. And then Sullivan is your DH. That's a very formidable lineup. And, again, I don't think Reed Stallman's going to go out there and win a gold glove by anything, but I think he can handle left field. And I think that he is a guy that has the athleticism to really help us. But if you're going to park a guy, maybe he doesn't have the arm to play right but could play left for you. So there may be a little bit of a growing pain there early in the year. But when you begin to think about what he can do with the bat, and he has hit some tape measure shots. And, again, we signed him to replace Hunter Hines at first base and then get Hunter back. So you kind of get the benefit of those two big left-handed bats. And that's one of the things that I think about with Highfield, right? When Highfield doesn't catch, maybe he plays center. Maybe he plays left. And you keep his big right-handed bat in the lineup. And I ran the numbers yesterday. I mean, the offensive numbers last year for our catchers were not great. They weren't. And Joe Powell did much of the heavy lifting. You remember Johnny Long by the end of the year was hitting under 200. And Spoleto was 1-for-10. On the year. Joe Powell, of course, 5 home runs, I think 18 RBIs, hit about 270. But outside of that, there wasn't much to speak of. And you think, again, Joe was away from baseball for 18 months. So you have some depth now. Last year, that catching position was really, really precarious. You go out and you recruit Johnny Long to kind of be your emergency catcher to give you some depth behind Highfield because you couldn't go out there and go get a bona fide catcher with Ross, a guy that we expect to be a pro player come June, you weren't going to be able to go get a guy and say, hey, we need you to come in here and be our backup catcher. You know, guys don't go in the portal thinking that way, but Johnny Long was a guy, hey, I've always been a backup catcher. This gives me a chance to be in the SEC. I'm going to go. And then Ross gets hurt in fall ball, and you're stuck having to go get Joe Powell out of the Fire Academy to come be your number two catcher. And so now he's had the benefit now of a full year back in college baseball because, he joined us in spring training last year. So he's had a year to work in the cage and a year to kind of refine the skill a little bit. People forget he was the leading hitter in 21 for the Cincinnati Bearcats. He was the leading hitter, hitting almost, 365, I think. And so now that catcher room looks dramatically different than it did a year ago. Dramatically different. Jackson Owen didn't play last year, and now people are wondering, what do we do with him? He's cooled off a little bit as of late, but he may actually be the better receiver within the group. But Ross Highfield, I think, just does the best job at controlling the running game. And Ross has got to stay locked in. He does. But when you begin to factor in, what this offense can be, Highfield, potential to be a double-digit home run guy. Ace Reese, I think Ace has got 6-7 home runs this spring. You know, Dylan Cup's not a big power guy, but, you know, Sawyer Reeves, sneaky power, hit four bombs last year. You know what Hunter Hines can do. You put Stallman out there, a double-digit home run guy. Noah Sullivan is your DH, double-digit home run guy. You don't expect Chance to hit double-digit home runs, but you start thinking about Nolan Stevens. If that guy makes the jump we need him to make, he could potentially be a double-digit home run guy too. And so not expecting everybody to meet those numbers, but the reality of it is this offense has the capability of being very, very good. And then you factor in the bullpen, not going to have to stretch the starters out. You know, if they're rolling good, you want them to go, right? But when you have so many arms available that you believe are capable of pitching in the Southeastern Conference, you don't have to expect a guy like a Cal Steven to go out there and give you 7 or 8 innings. You know, you'd love for that on a Friday night to save the rest of your bullpen. But when you've got your bullpen and you don't have to, you know, spend your premium arm throwing on Tuesdays, it really gives you a unique makeup to this team as you begin to think about what's left. I think this team could finish as high as 4 in the league. I picked the 6th, but I definitely think we finish in the top half. And I think if we stay healthy with the schedule that we have, we should absolutely be hosting this year. And I also think, too, that we're probably one of those teams people don't want to see, especially if they have to come to the Dude, because not only will they have to deal with a really good baseball team, they're going to have to deal with all of you. And we make it very, very difficult on opponents. Now, we'll feed you after the ball game, but during the ball game, we expect to beat you substantially. We love baseball around here. We do. And so I look forward to you guys make plans. Again, the weather next weekend should be really good. Chance of rain on Saturday. So if you were thinking, oh, man, I hate going to baseball early in February because it's always so cold and frigid, it looks like we're going to get a break in the February weather this weekend and next weekend. So make plans to attend. Had done so, go to DutyNimbleBook.com, and you can order all of my sports titles there. Get signed copies. Valentine's Day is coming up. Books are a great gift, right? Even if you don't read, you know, especially collector's items, right? You're a Mississippi State fan. You need to have these Mississippi State books because one day it's going to be a rainy day and you're going to sit down and read. And also, too, True West Floats by Stargold, we're running the special, 2 floats for $99. Now, what's interesting, too, it doesn't have to be a date night deal where the husband takes a float and the wife takes a float. You can give both floats to your significant other, right? And it's good for like 6 months. And so for more information, dial 662-268-7601. You can speak to my lovely wife, Dana. She can answer all your questions. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. If you're not already a member, you certainly should be. The best source for Mississippi State sports in the universe. Jeanspage.com. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.